Why did you grow a beard, Gary?
I told you this before, Kerry. It makes me look suave and virile at the same time.
Okay, but there's something else there.
Go on. What are you coming up with this time?
Well, you look like one of those singers from the 70s in the Eurovision Song Contest. Probably Scandinavian.
Well, ABBA had beards.
Yeah, but they look well-groomed, though.
But a beard maketh the man.
What? Euro trash. You're Peterborough's very own hipster. Oh, sorry, no one is meant to know you come from there.
Yeah, thanks. Secret out. But I'm a sophisticated version of Peterborough.
Okay, well, let's use our real Eurovision and look at Europe's young tennis hopes.
Well, I'm just going to go have a trim.
Can I suggest taking it all off, sir? Drop Shot, Chapter 3, Eurovision. So, Gary, a serious question to get started on this episode about the Europeans. Which of the Europeans do you think is most likely or most able to grow a beard?
Of those we're going to talk about in this chapter of Drop Shot, I would say Rublev, because there's a genius in there waiting to get out.
Are you trying to imply that beard and genius go hand in hand?
Not trying.
Well, okay, if it's an attempt at some twisted logic, I fail to be swayed on that one.
Well, speaking of twisted, I think Rublev is a good place to start, because this episode we're talking about Eurovision, the young up-and-coming hopes of tennis in Europe. And we've seen, especially in the last 10 to 15 years at least, there has been a dominance from the European players, the top four, the big four, have been Roger Federer, Rafa Nadal, Novak Djokovic and Andy Murray, all European players. And later on in this series, we will be talking about those more established stars that are coming through. But at the moment with the next gen, while we were in Milan, we saw the likes of Rublev and Hurkacz and Munar. And I think Rublev was the most interesting of that trio. Now, he's not the most, you know, the highest ranked player from that trio, but he is the most interested because he is a bit of a tortured soul, isn't he?
Yeah, I don't know if I'd call him a tortured soul. He strikes me as a very frustrated soul. There's something about him. He always seems on the verge of losing everything and getting really uptight and really cross. And I don't know whether that's possibly the way that he thinks about the game is so good. And sometimes his ability may let him down, or because he's had injuries, because he had a really bad injury where he fractured his back, didn't he? Lower back fracture.
Well, we'll come on to that a bit later when we talk about maybe what has held him back. But I think when you watch him play, Rublev is his own worst enemy. And it was something that when we spoke to him after one of his matches that he lost in Milan, he conceded himself.
Yeah, it was a tough match. I lost focus with the rackets because I don't know how it's possible. This string, I don't know, no, it's no point to talk about it. I just lose my emotion and I start to play a little bit later than I should play.
It's interesting, isn't it, Gary? We spoke to TFO after he had lost a game, and the change in his personality from when we'd seen him all happy and a bit jokey in the press conference previously. It's the same thing with Rublev here. You know, this is a guy who's articulate, happy to talk all the time. And here we are struggling with this, as you would like to call him, tortured soul, which he did seem tortured after that, explaining but not wanting to give everything away. You felt actually it would have only taken a moment for him to really open up and let loose. But he finally managed to keep himself together and walked away without giving too much of his anger to us.
Well, that interview as well was only 38 seconds, and I think he did well just to speak to us because we could see how angry he was. But the thing that I took most from that was just this whole idea of the, you know, when he talks in that interview, he says, I don't know, it's no point to talk about it, I just lose my emotion. He knows he's doing it and he just can't rein it in, he can't control it. And I think that there's some players in the past throughout tennis or any other sport that when they play on the edge emotionally like that, it's the making of them. But then in some instances, it can be the breaking. And that's where I think Rublev is a really interesting character.
Yeah, I agree with you. I find there's something really exciting about watching him play because you don't know what's going to happen next. He seems so intense. And there, this intensity in someone like Rublev is a curiosity to watch because you know that the next forehand he hits has got as much chance of going 4 feet out or meters out, if you're listening in America, or be a winner down the line. You just don't quite know. And I think that's where his frustration comes from.
And going back to that interview, he says, I don't know how it's possible, when he talks about something that he's done that's failed. He's like, how is this possible? What, my mind knows what it wants to do. I've played it out in my mind, yet I still don't execute it properly. And I think that's where the frustration comes from. But seeing that raw emotion out on court is something that I like seeing in sportsmen, I like seeing in tennis players, and just that personal struggle is that he's playing the opponent, but he's playing himself at, you know, at the same time.
I agree with you again, because he is one of those players, you don't want to walk away from a match of his, because anything could happen. And I can understand his frustration, I feel it, and really, it's got to be a hard place to be as a tennis player when you've got all the great ambition in the world and something's not going right with your game.
Now, before we had that emotional one-to-one with him in the mix zone after that defeat, we did speak to him the day before, and as we found with TFO and other players, he was a completely different character.
Hiya.
And this is Kerry and Gary. We're going to walk and talk.
Okay.
Good to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
Is that possible for you guys?
Yeah, yeah. Perfect.
We can try.
Okay.
It's always worth giving it a go. So we're doing a podcast about the next gen, how people got here, their story. Really, we'd love to know how you got into tennis and how it all worked for you to be here now.
I don't know. I don't even remember how I started tennis. But my grandpa was in love with tennis. My mom was used to be a tennis player. So basically, when I was not even able to walk, my mom was taking me to the tennis court, and I was there. And this is how it started, I guess.
And at the age of 14, you had a meeting with Nadal, didn't you? And that was quite important in your life?
I think I was a little bit more age. But yeah, it was a great experience. I remember I was so happy because I practiced, I don't know, maybe 5 days or 6 days. And I was really happy that moment.
How did that come about?
I finished the Davis Cup match, and we have one coach from Guillermo Vilas, who works for Russian Federation, and he knew that I'm going to go after Davis Cup to Mallorca to have, I don't know, holidays with my family. And he said that there is opportunity for you to hit with Rafa those days if you want. And I say, yes, of course I want. So in the end, I was practicing with Rafa.
So that must have changed your life. I mean, for you to be a young tennis player, to be with somebody like that and see what it takes to be a top player, did it really change your thinking, or did it make you understand what you now needed to do to become a top player?
To be honest, I was not thinking about this at all. It was more about that that I had a great time to know that the tennis player that was my idol in the past, and that I practiced with him, that I have great experience, that I feel this level, that to get more motivation, to work harder, to become a one-day player like this. I think it was more about this.
And do you think you are getting to where you want to be as a tennis player? Do you always have to keep looking at where you are and where you want to be?
This is a tough question. I never put goals on my head, but I always have inside only one choice, that I want to be like one of the best tennis players, and I don't look for plan B or something else. Just if it's not going to work, okay. But at least I try to do more than my best for this.
And are you happy that you are where you are now? As you say, you're injury free. You are now hopefully going to have a great year next year.
For the moment, I'm not. I mean, I'm okay. Let's put it in this way. I'm okay.
Good. Thank you very much, Andre. Much appreciated.
Thank you. Cheers, Mark.
That's been a walk and talk with Andre Rublev there. That's why you can hear the crowd in the background. They're cheering for our interview, actually.
And our good friend Stefanos was leaving the players' lounge just as we weren't allowed to enter.
Probably could have got in if we'd have walked in.
I think if I had shown my face, it would have happened. I'm not sure about you.
I think I could have got in because I'm so short.
Well, they
I can
would,
sneak
they
in.
Have seen you.
Yeah, exactly. That's how I get into most places. It's my height gets me in. People don't understand that. You know, you stand out, especially with a big beard. You should get a trim.
And these looks.
Yeah.
Being in Milan as well, it would have been surely he's a model.
Oh, dear. We do have to cut right about here.
So when we were in Milan at the time, it's changed since with Tsitsipas and TFO's exploits in Australia. Rublev was the only one of those players that had got to a Grand Slam quarterfinal, which had come in the 2017 US Open. But on the back of that, that elevated his ranking to be 31 in the world come February 2018. And then, as you alluded to earlier, the injury struck when he had that lower back fracture. And it was interesting in that interview as we're walking with him. It was the first interview you'd actually done, wasn't it, as well, when we did the walk and talk, and we made good use of that lift out of the media centre into the main concourse, which people will hear when we're pushing buttons and with other people in there. But when you sort of mentioned the injury, he laughed it off and he says, "I'm fine for as long as I'm not injured." And again, getting into the psychology of the player, you can tell the torture that he must have gone through. And that injury really held back his career, and his ranking now has jumped around in the top 100. But the fact that he hit the heights that he did, getting to the world 31, just shows the ability that he has got.
Yeah, definitely. And what's also interesting about that is, again, it's this compartmentalizing that I think we're seeing going on with this player. You know, Rublev is trying to go, that was then, this is now, I'm fit, let's not talk any more about it. Let's not dwell on it. It's way too painful a memory. Took months of his life up to get right. What's also interesting in that interview is him talking about Nadal, because Nadal gave him that real tonic as a kid, whatever age it was that he went to see Nadal. None of us seem to really know. It was an inspirational moment, but look at who he lost to in the quarterfinal in the US Open. It was Nadal.
And Nadal has a habit of putting these next geners in their place, doesn't he?
Yeah, I mean, he's done it quite a lot. He's like saying, glad you're all about, guys, but, you know, if you're going to come up here and take my spot, you're going to have to start beating me in the big tournaments.
And his journey to the quarterfinal at the US Open, it wasn't as if he played nobody either. He beat Dimitrov en route, and he beat him in straight sets and beat him comfortably. And then he beat Goffin in straight sets and comfortably. But then when he plays Nadal, he plays the real deal, and he loses in straight sets, and he only wins 5 games in 3 sets as well. And it just shows the level of what these players are trying to achieve.
Yeah, you can get so far, but you've got to go that step further to make that leap up. And let's not forget, players like Goffin and Dimitrov, they've been in that almost lost generation period where they've had to aspire to the top four, which when Wawrinka was fit was the top five, and they were all the also rounds with players like Nishikori, etc. And this is what they've got to do. They can beat that level of the older players, but it's the very top they've still got to beat.
And on that note, Kerry, talking about the so-called lost generation, I think it's a good time to bring in someone that we met in Milan, who is a journalist, Pragda Hegde, who works for the Times of India, because she spoke to us about an interview she did with Rublev a couple of years ago in Doha, where he spoke about his concern that maybe this next gen could also become an addition to the lost gen rather than replacing those at the top.
I spoke to Rublev about this in Doha 2 years ago almost, and he said, you know, you guys think we're really good, you know, because we're competing against each other. We're over there, we're in that. He said, maybe we'll work. Maybe we'll just bomb like the previous generation, because, you know, It is very easy to forget that the 28th, 27th, the Dimitrov's generation, if you want to call them, didn't really measure up, because they were up against the Rafas and the Rogers and the Novaks, and it was very hard. And the same may happen to these boys. So, and they have age on their side, which is a huge plus, but I don't know if this is going to be the next big thing. You don't know unless they actually go out there and win those titles and make it theirs.
Pragda there gave us some real insight into the mentality of Rublev and the other young players and how they're going to deal at taking over from the Dimitrov generation. But also, she then gave us some insight into the mentality of Rublev and how he dealt with injury.
Also, he is, he's coming back from an injury. He is, and I think he's one of the kids who's hard on himself because his expectations of himself is so great. So, and he's also the only player in the field to have made a Grand Slam quarterfinals in. So, last year's finalist, he's good. Rublev is good, and he's smart. He can speak his mind. He is. I think he'll be good if he makes it. And can he make it? I think he has. I don't know if he has the shots, but I think he has a vision, a dream, and which I think plays a huge part in actually getting there and getting stuff done.
So before that injury, when Rublev was flying, he was the Russian number one. He was ranked number 31 in the world. But since then, he's lost a bit of pace to Karen Khachanov and Daniil Medvedev. And interestingly, it was Khachanov who beat him at Indian Wells as well. Now, Rublev says he isn't in competition with his fellow Russians, but I guess getting that prize as being the best player from your country is a real boost, because that's what you're looking for as a player. You're looking to be number one. Now, if you're not number one in the world, you'll be number one in your country.
Yeah, I also think there's something about saying you're not in competition when you've slipped down the rankings. It's a safer thing to say. I would have thought it must really hurt him. And again, we come back to this frustration. He was out there in front and in pole position. Everybody was talking about Rublev a few years ago as he was going to be the one to come through. And now look at him. There's so many players who've leapfrogged above him.
And coming into April, Khachanov was the number 12 in the world. Medvedev was 15th. And Rublev was 99th. So you can see that gap has appeared, and it's rather dramatic now.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because you do fear for someone like Rublev that you hope he can stay injury-free, because that is his only chance of catching these guys up.
Do you think that when you look at some of the vital statistics on these players, Khachanov is 6'6", Medvedev is 6'6", and Rublev is my height, 6'2"?
I don't think it makes any difference at all to me, because they're all very, very tall. And I can't even see the top of them when I talk to them to get an interview half the time.
But as we see that with sport in general, that sometimes you have the genetics that can hold you back. Or do you think that Rublev has something?
You're talking to the man who's been held back by genetics for years. Just for those who don't know me, I'm about 5'5", so I dream of being anywhere nearer 5'6" than anything else. So yeah, it's got to make some kind of difference, hasn't it? That's a 4-inch difference, and I guess just simple things like serve, it's coming down from 4 inches higher, so it surely has to be stronger and faster.
Rublev's ranking may have slipped. However, his form is showing signs of coming back, as we saw in Miami recently. He came through qualifying there, eventually lost to Shapovalov, but he did beat Marin Cilic.
Again, that's got to be quite frustrating, but also quite empowering at the same time. There he is now at a level where he's got to go through qualifying process to get into the main tournament. But that must do him some good, because he's doing what he will consider a number 30-odd kind of player in the world would do. He's beaten the opposition that's in front of him, and then he's going and beating players like Cilic. That's no small achievement.
And, of course, it's putting the debate about height to rest, because we're talking about whether he's too small to go on and achieve something. He's beating Cilic.
Yeah, and I think we should just leave this height issue alone, please.
So on your travels last summer, Kerry, it wasn't just players you were befriending, was it?
No, I met all sorts of people from the world of tennis. Presenters, journalists, writers, photographers, tournament directors, people who painted the lines, people who showed you to your car in the car park, everybody across the board.
Well, one of those journalists was Roz Sattar from BritWatch.
Yeah, I remember her very well. When I walked into Edgbaston, it was...
The Nature Valley Classic.
I know. Just let me get it out. I'll get there in the end. The Nature Valley Classic, that was it. And I walked in and Roz looked up at me and saw a new face coming into the press room and said, oh, so who are you? I said, oh, I'm doing a bit of writing. And she said, oh, so you're a threat to us. And I said, no, I'm doing photographs as well. I guess I'm doing both. And she said, you're a double threat. And that was it. We laughed and I found her really helpful and a great person to get to know on the tour.
Well, it was rather apt as well because Roz gave us some interesting thoughts on how this next gen are a threat to the players that are on their way out.
Well, it's interesting because you're right, we have the next gen and the ATP are marketing them as that. Prior to that, we had the generation lost boys, so the people that were coming after the big four, so Djokovic, Federer, Nadal, Murray, you could even add Wawrinka in there. And then there was a generation that just didn't seem to have that impact. Raonic, Nishikori, Dimitrov. Now, I think time has passed them by, and now the faces that we're looking at to take over from the big four or five, depending on how you want to look at it, are the people like Stefanos Tsitsipas, Francis Tiafoe, Alexander Zverev, Dominic Thiem. These are going to be the faces that will be winning the slams once the others start phasing out. But the big question is when, and that's what makes it quite exciting, I think.
And do you think it's important for tennis, the fact that as these big names that have been so dominant for so long, as they go, that it's sort of timely that now there's this core group of players that are there to replace them, because the sport relies, it's an individual sport and it seems to rely on those individual names. And when they go, when Federer goes, how do they replace him? And suddenly they've been gifted with this next gen almost at the perfect time.
Yeah, well, definitely the perfect time. I think, you know, Federer came through towards the end of the era of, you know, Sampras, Agassi, you know, Roddick. And in fact, Roddick was unfortunate because he kind of sat in the middle of both of that. So his potential as a slam champion and you know, a standard bearer for the USA kind of died a little bit because you had Sampras, Agassi, and then just as it looked like it was his time, there was this upstart called Federer and Rafael Nadal. And for a long time, it was just those two. Then Novak Djokovic really started making waves. Andy Murray finally made his breakthrough in amongst all of this. Stan Wawrinka upset the apple cart. So, you know, this lot, I think, will probably end up being pretty successful. It's going to take something very special to have somebody as successful as Roger. And I think, in all honesty, the only person that can beat Roger is going to be Novak. But yeah, I think what's going to happen is that the old guys, the two oldest guys, I think Nadal and Roger, will be the first to go. And it's really up to this next gen to make their mark. This young crop are fearless, and they you know, and they're ready for it. I think it's going to take a while. I felt for Thiem. I thought that, you know, he had his chances at Roland Garros, and by the time he got to the final, it was spent. But he definitely is the crown prince of clay. I can definitely see him getting Roland Garros at least.
Roz talked about Dominic Thiem there. We spoke to him a short while ago, and he's one of those players who's just beyond this group of players age-wise. The first gen of the next gen, I guess. And he's noticed the demographic of players in the top 100 is changing.
Tsitsipas and Deminal, I mean, Tsitsipas is... I'm not really considering him as next gen. The guy's number 15 in the world and played finals of a Masters 1000, so he's completely established in the absolute world class. And Deminal, basically the same, and I think he will also be top 20, top 15 next year. So it's just amazing and also interesting to me. When I came up, I was first time top 100 with 20 and a half, and I was the youngest there basically. And now there are way younger players in the top 100 and way further already. So I think it's changing a little bit again. So way younger players are having their breakthrough early again than it was 4 or 5 years ago when I did it.
I don't want to get ahead of ourselves and mention Alex de Minaur in this episode, Kerry, mainly because he's not really European and we're talking about European talent here, but also be a bit premature because he is the subject of chapter 4 of Drop Shop, which will be out next week. But with de Minaur and then Tsitsipas, again, European, but we have an episode dedicated to him coming out. It's just interesting to see that the players we're talking about here, de Minaur and Tsitsipas, are a cut above them, not only in ranking, but in the way they're applying themselves and they're remaining consistent. And it's something that Alex Sharp, who's also a friend of ours, he's worked with us across many different tennis projects, is something that he's spoken to us about.
Hello, I'm Alex Sharp. I'm a reporter and I work in social media for Tennis Australia at the Australian Open with Roland Garros and at Wimbledon.
What do you think the challenges are for someone like de Minaur as they're coming through now that he's only 19 and a lot of those other players were 20, 21? What do you think the challenges are for those players? What do they need to do to realise that potential?
Well, also the challenge is that the top players are playing for longer. So Federer, etc. are still going. So it's hard to build momentum and win titles when there's so many legends still playing the sport. So that's a big obstacle for them. But in terms of their game, it's just the consistency. The guys that made the next gen in Milan all have talent. They're all exceptional tennis players. But it's about week in, week out, being able to produce it. And someone like de Minaur or Tsitsipas both produce that week in, week out this year on the tour.
From Rublev being a player who was out of his comfort zone in Milan, which I think he took himself out of his comfort zone with his dedication to his craft, his desire to be perfect and his frustration that it wasn't perfect. When we saw Hubert Hurkacz, I thought he was a player out of his depth.
I don't know if he was out of his depth. Maybe he, I don't know, maybe he just felt a bit challenged by the tournament, interestingly enough. He certainly looks like a player who's got an uncomplicated game and possibly he just needs to add a few more shots to his repertoire.
He was the quiet man of Milan though, wasn't he? Because while we spent our time with all of the players, Taylor Fritz aside, which we spoke about in the last episode with our inability to tie him down because we were always doing something, Hurkacz was one of the players who didn't really do so much press, didn't really speak so much. And when he had his press conferences, they were short and sweet. And we only actually spoke to him once.
He's not just a pretty fit guy. He's an ally,
but... Well, thanks, guys. Going to first questions, please. Roger?
Can you talk a little about the format? How easy or difficult is it to get into a match, or do you have time?
Yeah, I mean, it's different. It's funny because you get on the court and you want to do everything quickly. You have, basically, you need to have your racket in the hand to just sprint to the center of the court and do the coin toss. So, but I mean, for the warm-up, it actually works out, I mean. If there would be maybe 1 minute after we finish the warm-up, it might be easier, because if there is not, then you basically need to stay on your side and then start the match. So, I mean, you can get used to it, but for the first time, it's different.
You've played two pretty intense games over 2 days. How is it getting yourself ready for today? Is it quite a stressful experience?
I mean, it's different, especially with this format. You cannot lose your focus on few points. I mean, if you lose one game, then the set is over. I mean, I, against Francis, the first set, I mean, I played two series games and lost a set in 12 minutes. So, I mean, it can go really fast.
And does it give you sort of impetus when you look at how it went yesterday, that it regroups you for today to take on this next match, which was really important for you to win today?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I needed to learn from this experience from yesterday and see how it looks like here, also with the different rules. So I felt today was maybe, at the end I was a little bit better, so I'm happy with that.
But from the quiet man of Milan to the silent assassin of the ATP Tour, because this year, Hurkacz has changed the conversation, hasn't he?
Yeah, it looks as though maybe Milan's put him in good stead. Maybe it's given him confidence to understand exactly where he is as a player, but he really has moved on in leaps and bounds.
He has, and when we've seen him playing in America recently, he had an interest in Indian Wells, and then he also went on in Miami to go deep into the event where he beat Dominic Thiem, who had just won at Indian Wells.
I know, it's quite extraordinary how these players evolve so quickly at this age. And maybe that's something we have to understand, is that one week they can be okay, next week they can be brilliant, and then the next week they could be awful. It is just such a movable feast.
So from the quiet man of Milan to the silent assassin, here's another moniker for Hercats.
Don't tell me it's another cliche.
Is he the dark horse of this group of next generation players? Because...
cliche alert.
Where's your klaxon? But you look at the players he's beating now. And in Indian Wells, he beat Nishikori as well. He beat Shapovalov, although he did lose to Federer. But he's looking like a player who's matured a lot since we were with him in November. And he's just slowly coming through when people aren't expecting much from him.
Well, you know when I was saying a little bit earlier about how his game is uncomplicated and maybe he needs to add shots to his repertoire? Well, maybe this is also part of his success, that actually very little is there to go wrong. So if he's got the game that works, when it's on fire, it's on fire.
And interestingly as well, that this time last year, he entered Indian Wells when he was outside the top 200. And now, as we go into April, he's just outside the top 50.
I think we're going to see consistency from this kid. I think Milan has done something for him. I think mentally, it's made him believe. And we all know that belief can be half the battle with being a top player.
Now, it wasn't through want of trying that we didn't speak to Hercats.
No, it's true. We were standing in the mix zone waiting to get hold of him, and we kept getting bundled out the way by a Polish film crew and audio crew. And they're going, "He's Polish. We have to speak to him first. It is our right to do so." And it was a really strange situation. I mean, I don't know if you've seen this thing happen, but there was almost like ownership on the player going on.
And this is where being 6'2" and having elbows comes in handy, because you can start elbowing people out of the way and stepping in front of their shot and just being a little bit disingenuous.
And while you're doing that, being my height at 5'5", I snuck in under the radar, straight up to Hercats, mic up his nose, and managed to get the small interview. And how's this been for a week for you? Has it been a real learning experience? Has it been everything you wanted it to be? What do you think you've come away from this with?
Yeah, I mean, it was a great learning experience. I mean, I played against a great players, and it was also a lot of fun to play here. So, I mean, it's a great city, and it was fun, and I'll take that lessons for the new season.
So what are your plans now? Will you have a break, and then will you start practicing again, and what are your aims for next season?
Yeah, I mean, for sure I'll have a break now to recover a little bit after a long season, and then I'll prepare for the next season, and hope I'll improve my game a lot, and I'll play much better.
And did you enjoy the intensity of this week?
Yeah, I mean, it was intense, but it was a lot of fun. I mean, it was great tournament. Unfortunately, I will leave tomorrow, but it was a lot of fun.
Thank you very much. So, Gary, we've talked about the silent assassin. We've talked about the tortured genius of Rublev. Well, for me, I'd like to talk about Munar a little bit. The gentleman of the next gen.
How do you pronounce his first name?
Jaume.
Jaume.
Oh, yeah.
We went over this in chapter one.
Yeah, we did. Oh, well, there you go. Anyway, I have to say, he was charming. I actually look forward to speaking to Munar. And I really hope he goes further as a tennis player.
Well, it's interesting you say that, because when he talks about his ambitions, he's talking about top 40. He's not really aiming to be higher, yet he's there with Rafa Nadal now, training at Nadal's academy in Mallorca. And he's having a good year. He's having a good year, and he's reached 4 quarterfinals this year. He's had a career high of 61 heading into April. And he's just generally on an upward trajectory. So for him to be talking about only wanting top 40, I find interesting, and I think maybe that is the one criticism you can make of him, is that because we enjoy talking to him, he was the gentleman of the next gen, but maybe he isn't as ruthless enough.
Yeah, maybe he's not overly ambitious. He kind of knows his level for now, and maybe that's a good thing. It's what we can talk about here as consolidation, and perhaps that's a good thing for him, and he's doing it slowly and gradually. We've seen quite a lot of these next gen guys leap up the rankings, and he seems to be making a slow progress, but an assured progress.
And what I do like about him is that something you alluded to when we spoke to him is that he's a grafter, he works hard.
Any questions? How do you keep your confidence so high? Because when you're out on the court, you seem to be really involved in the game, you seem to have your confidence fully there.
I don't know. I mean, I take the confidence when I put so many hours on the court practicing. It is not about yesterday or a week ago. We have been working hard since the preseason this year. And why not to be confident if it's been a good year for me and I felt really comfortable at least the most part of the season. I'm just feeling like this, and obviously it's with my character too.
And on top of explaining to us about how hard he works, sometimes he puts in 12-hour shifts when he's training, whether that's on court or going over video analysis. He's also a player that not so much gives back to the community in the way of he's always out with the kids, but he respects the younger kids coming through. We saw the way he interacted with the young fans in Milan, and you also asked him about the players at the academy that were watching him and putting stuff on social media throughout the event in Milan.
It's emotional. I mean, people who is watching you doing something, they trying to learn and to be that person who they watch. It's special. I mean, the kids you have seen in the pictures, I'm meeting them every day there in the academy when I practice. So it's pretty special. I don't know. I'm just trying to be someone that they can look. I'm just trying to do the things well to be an example. But the most example there in the academy is Rafa. So I'm looking higher and I'm looking to Rafa, and they will also do this.
And remember, he's also got a good relationship with Rafa Nadal.
He has, although Rafa is a Real Madrid fan. And Jaume, as he explained to us, is Barcelona.
Have you heard from Rafa at all this week since you started playing?
Yeah, I've been chatting with him. I don't know, difficult moments for him for sure, but I know he can just come back stronger as he did a lot of times already. And Rafa is a fighter, so I know and I'm pretty sure that he will be able to come back to the highest in the world.
Last question. Yeah.
Are you?
Yeah, please go ahead.
Are you a Real Madrid supporter like
that? Or? No, we arguing about this. I am Barcelona supporter since I was young. Yeah. It's not.
I'm going to quote Russell Crowe from Gladiator here, Kerry. Are you not entertained?
I would be if you were in gladiatorial costume, but you're not, so I'm not.
But you have been entertained by a certain Alex Demonauer, haven't you?
Am I allowed to talk about him now?
Not quite. You're going to have to save your excitement for another week, next week specifically, because that's when we'll release chapter 4 of Drop Shot, and it's all going to be about Alex and you. You're going to be under the microscope. So get ready.
I can't wait. I really can't. Shall I do my sign-off now?
Please do.
Until next time, when we speak all about Alex Demonauer, this is Drop Shot. Dropshot is written and produced by Gary Hayes and me, Kerry Levy. Audio editing and sound mixing by Sounds Like These, with special thanks to Ollie Slack and Taylor Hayes. Music for this episode was composed by Jimmy Goodwin. Our thanks go out to Mark Epps and Edward LaCava from the ATP. We would also like to thank Alex Sharp, Roz Satter and Pragda Hegde. Find us on Instagram and Twitter at This Is Dropshot. This has been a PML studio production.
If you've enjoyed this episode of Dropshot, leave a review, tell a friend, and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Mm-hmm.